Hi, and welcome to Women in Philanthropy. This is a podcast about and by women working in philanthropic giving. Grantmakers, fundraisers, executive directors, researchers, advisors. You can't always see behind the scenes in philanthropic giving, and that means you can't see who enables this giving. My name is Michelle Fugel-Gartner. I'm a philanthropic practitioner and researcher. My doctoral research demonstrated that most of what we know about working in philanthropic giving is told to us through a male point of view. This podcast offers the opportunity to hear from women working in giving. The idea for a podcast was inspired by having dim sum with my friends and talking about our roles in philanthropy, our challenges, and our thoughts. Each 15-minute episode will connect you with a woman in philanthropy. You'll hear about her role, how she got there, and how it enables giving. You'll also hear her thoughts on issues such as worth, negotiation, and influence. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the podcast. And if you are a woman working in philanthropy and would like to share your story, please get in touch. And now, our woman in philanthropy. The Women in Philanthropy podcast is generously sponsored by the Voluntary Sector Studies Network. VSSN promotes understanding of the UK voluntary sector through research and provides a voice and a meeting place for voluntary sector researchers in the UK. Membership is invited from academics and practitioners. For more information, look at the website www.vssn.org.uk. Welcome back, everybody. This is the season one wrap-up of Women in Philanthropy podcast. It's been an incredible journey interviewing women for about a year now, and I'm really pleased to be able to have this episode reflect on the major themes that people have talked about, some of the learnings, and maybe turn the tables a little bit on myself. I'm joined here today with my very good friend, Elaine Kessler. I've known Elaine for over 20 years. She's known me well before I got into philanthropy. She is an educator, a photographer, an activist herself. And I thought there was no other person who could sort of turn the tables and ask me the questions about this season than Elaine. Elaine, do you want to say a few words about yourself?
Hi, it's great to be here. I actually work for a nonprofit now myself. I'm the Director of Workforce and Community Partnerships for the Gilbert Chamber of Commerce.
Well, I've given Elaine a little bit of a brief of what to ask and how we might do the session. But what I thought I would say is, Elaine, some of the interview participants, when I was wrapping up the interviews, asked me about my own role in philanthropy. And I hadn't shared that through the podcast. And I thought, okay, maybe you can ask me the questions that I've asked everybody this whole season.
Yeah. So I understand that you've interviewed 14 women in philanthropy this season about their different roles. So what, Michelle, is your role?
As you know, I've had several roles in philanthropy. At the moment, I'm feeling quite good about talking about the work I do as an advisor, an educator, and a researcher. I think that really covers the way that I feel I can contribute to the field. Maybe what I'll add is that in the roles I've had in philanthropy, I realize how many elements of different roles that I really enjoy. And so over time, it's been trying to find the right combination that continues to keep me curious and continues to keep me passionate about this field.
Okay, so I have known you for a long time, and so I might be able to answer this question myself, but I think your listeners would want to know, how did you get into this?
Yeah, so like many of the women who have spoken in the season, I too fell into philanthropy, and it is a longer backstory, as you know, but you know, I was unable to live in Canada the first time and found myself in Seattle. I applied at a temp agency because I had a mountain of student loans from my master's coming due. And the woman called me at one point and said, oh, you said you liked nonprofit-y things. So there's this role at the Gates Foundation. You want to interview for it. And I had only heard of Gates Foundation sort of through my master's work in a very small way. I didn't know what a foundation was, even though I had kind of worked in the nonprofit sector.
And that's how it happened. So I ended up working at Gates Foundation in the executive office for 2 years from that opportunity. And I guess I would say, I'll add on to that, because yes, it is a longer story. It was very formative to have the opportunity as my first role in philanthropy, as one might imagine. And what happened in that is that I really started to look around me, and the seed of a research idea started to form even at that early time. And that was just looking around at people around me and be like, wow, who are these people? Who are we? And how did we get here? How did we get here? And that's really what formulated then my doctoral research, obviously much later down the road.
Fantastic. Well, I think your listeners also probably want to know, how does your role now enable giving?
Reflecting on this, one of the things that I realized is that I really like story. I mean, I think all humans really like story. So that sounds a bit cliche or common sense to say, but okay, so you have girls. Do you know American Girl dolls, right? The American Girl dolls? Yeah. So before those were dolls, they were a book series. So when I was probably in second grade, it was a book series, and I really was captivated by Molly, who lived during World War II. And I read her storyline, and I read the other girls' storylines. And when I was thinking about this question, I thought, yeah, I really like stories of people. And I'm a big fiction reader as well, but when I started in philanthropy, again, wanting to know who people were, I was captivated by who philanthropists were and what their story was and how they ended up making money and then giving it away. And what I found in these roles I have now is that I want to help other people and people whose story hasn't been told to be able to tell their stories. And so that's what I think. That's how I think my roles right now in Able Giving, sort of on the advisory side, it's saying, right, what is your story in philanthropy? Why do you want to give? What is this about for you? On the research side, it's asking, how did we get into these roles and what does this mean? And on the education side, it's really about helping people be reflective of the roles that they have in nonprofit, in foundations. How do we do this work? Why do we do this work? So I think there's something I want to say. It's really about story and creating spaces and ways for people, and as I said, more people to be able to tell those stories.
Awesome. And so I'm going to guess that that's why you decided to do a podcast.
Yeah, that's great. I guess it wasn't as linear as all that. It wasn't as I like stories, let's do a podcast. It's interesting now sitting at the wrap up in the end of season one to think back about how this all started. And maybe at this point I'll start to talk about some of the themes that I have seen through the season. But what I would say is that there was a confluence of factors that led to this podcast. The first one being that, you know, I had done this doctoral research about roles. When we read about the roles of foundation professionals, which is what I was researching, CEOs, executives, they were biographies of men. In the course of doing my research, I had a conversation with a colleague, and she reached out to me and she said, are there any books that women wrote who were CEOs of foundation? Because there have been women CEOs. And I said, well, I haven't found them in the way that they talked about themselves and their roles. What I found is they've talked about a topic like impact investing and how their foundation did that. So it's not really about them. It's about something that they did. And I thought that was fascinating. And coming out of the doctoral research, I wanted to meet more people, kind of coming out of this very siloed, isolated time. And I was a member at the Conduit in London. And I thought, well, I wonder if there's women here in philanthropy. I wonder who the members are. Let's get people together. And so I convened a group called Women in Philanthropy because I wanted to know who else was working in this space. And, you know, when you have a meetup or you have an event, not everybody can come. So I then had the task to say, well, how will we capture things for folks who weren't here. And I don't like minutes. I felt that very formal. And I thought, well, how else could we give something to people who couldn't be here? What could we give? And I thought, oh, a podcast would be interesting. And then just, you know, I'm a little bit techie and I do want to try these things. So I was like, let's just try a podcast. Let's see if I can do it. Let's see how it works. And let's just go for it. So that's how it all came together. And so, you know, 11 episodes later and 14 women later, we have season one. If I think about the major themes or the major learnings, I kind of have three ideas, but you can interrupt me at any time to ask me more because, you know, this is an uncomfortable, I like to hear people's stories. I don't always like to tell all the stories. So, I guess there's three things I would say. There's the sort of general context of what women in philanthropy have said this season. There's certainly some challenges, and there's some opportunities. I think the general context, and obviously one of the reasons to start the podcast was that we need to appreciate the roles that are behind the scenes in philanthropy. I mean, you're working in a nonprofit, so you're starting to see the different types of roles that it takes to make this work. And I think often we talk about the donor or we talk about the organization, and we don't always see that the organization is made up of people. Or that the donor is being advised by people, even if they don't have an organization. There's an opacity to the sector generally, like, what is philanthropy? How do you do it? But there's an opacity to these roles. You know, you kind of fell into yours, you came into yours as well. And now you're seeing part of these, you're seeing all the roles come together. But before that, you might not have seen how they all connect. So there's opacity to how we understand these roles and these pathways into philanthropy. I think a lot of women this season said, well, I didn't go to school for this. I didn't study this. I came into this sort of accidentally, and I applied the skills that I had in my previous roles into this work. So I think that there's an opacity and a difficulty with the pathway, which then raises really important questions about diversity in these roles. Because if they're not clear to see, and they're kind of hidden, then anybody who is equity seeking won't see them as clearly as somebody who might be in a more privileged position. I think that's the general context. The other thing I think we can see from the season, which is really important, is that these roles are actually so interconnected, that you have communicators and fundraisers and corporate fundraisers and philanthropic advisors and researchers, who haven't I said, all these roles, they are so interconnected across the space, but they remain pretty siloed. That then you start to have these little like tension points. You have these little gaps. So you have this academic practice gap. So you have researchers who are doing really important research, but it might not always reach practice. Practitioners who are doing like evaluations that don't always get plug back into academic conceptualizations. You have little gaps in the fundraisers and the programmers. So the people who are fundraising are doing their fundraising, and then people who are creating programs and implementing them, there's a little bit of a gap, a little bit of a tension there. And then we certainly see this in being a philanthropist or being in a charity. So there's this little like tension gap in how those two stakeholders view each other and see each other working. So you have this really important interconnected web of roles, let's say, but you've got these tiny little gaps all over the place. So I think that's the context as well.
I see the gaps actually in my organization. I see, you know, I'm responsible for programming and someone else is responsible for fundraising. And the fundraiser thinks that, that her job's really important, which it is. But if we don't have the programming to support the fundraising, then what's the point? So yeah, there's definitely a disconnect. Trying to link those together or bridge that gap is certainly good work. What are the challenges and the opportunities that you see right now?
One of the things that this was the unsaid piece of the podcast, is that as I was interviewing women, and you know, obviously I got to know some of them, that these roles are precarious. not all of them are these, maybe in philanthropy, and there are some really great roles and there are some really secure roles in philanthropy, 100%. Especially when you look at the charitable sector at large, philanthropy sort of offers maybe a more certainty in employment. But that's not true completely, especially as you look across the type of roles. So one of the things I think we need to look at is that these roles can also often be on contract, part-time, a limited time duration. And they can be underfunded because there's a question of how much do organizations and society value philanthropy? And so if you're bringing in philanthropic expertise, is that valued enough? So that's one of the things I wanted to raise, because I think that's the unsaid piece, especially in the sector, that we aren't talking about, is the precarity of some of these roles, especially as they're new roles, emerging roles, sort of on the forefront of what to do next. It's really hard sometimes. The other thing I think that is also representative of this being a Women About podcast is women's underrepresentation in fields. And so that exists here in the philanthropic sector as well. So, women continue not to be fully represented in leadership or in ownership of platforms. So there's a couple great research reports. One just came out in the UK by Pro Bono Economics. It's called Women in Charities. It looks at the UK, but says very similar things. Lots of women work in the charitable sector, but they are not reaching leadership positions all the time. There is a wage gap. There's also questions about the conditions of their work. That exists in the philanthropic sector. There is a research study by Council of Foundations, again, showing women work in the sector, don't always reach leadership positions, and there's a wage gap. And I can link both of those in the podcast notes. But I think it's really important to look at that. It's also really important to look at who owns the media in philanthropy. I mean, as media is changing and technology is changing, when I look across the platforms that exist for philanthropic media, they're run and owned by men still. And I think it's just something interesting to look at. One of the reasons that resonates for me is a friend a few months ago on LinkedIn posted an article about the top 10 new givers to the Giving Pledge. So the Giving Pledge is signing a promise to give away your wealth. And the headline was the top new 10 givers. And when you looked at the top 10, they were men. And my friend on the LinkedIn post said, well, where are all the millennial women with the wealth? Where are they? Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I was like, did you read the article though? Because the women are listed in the body as spouses. They're there. They're wealth holders too. It's just the way the article is crafted that puts the men as the donor. Mm-hmm. So I think when we look a little bit more fine-grained, we start to see that these things are still present. So it's not that there hasn't been huge strides made in diversity. You know, that we're seeing better representation on panels, though not all panels, presentation panels and that sort of thing. We're seeing more effort given. But I think still in some of these little crevices where power is held, you still have examples of, where, especially in philanthropy, we talk about the male donor or the male who holds wealth, which I think is, a huge challenge. I guess the other thing I would just say is that there are still, just like every other field, there are bad actors, there are power struggles, there are egos impacting the field. You know, it has to do with money and where money should go. And I think that, we need to be alive to the fact that not every organization is run altruistically, and that, men and women can have bad leadership. So, there are, the philanthropic sector is not immune to that. I think across the women, though, one thing I'd like to say is that, this is such purpose-driven work for so many people that it really gives people an opportunity to feel like they are really contributing to society through the roles that they have in philanthropy. And across the season, you can see there's so many different tools being used. There's individual donations, foundation donations, corporate donations, there's social impact investing, there's research, there's communication, all these tools being used to create positive social change. So I think that that exemplifies what these roles can do. And also just the future. Women were so creative with like the next needed role. So they were, you know, we need futurists, we need chief purpose positions, we need people who are the liaisons between all these stakeholders, filling those gaps. We need to really tighten this network so that we can achieve the best possible outcomes for the world and societies. There's a real passion and creativity to the sector.
Awesome. Now, what's next for you and what's next for the podcast?
Elaine, that's a great question. Because the podcast came together so kind of accidentally, I didn't have a lot of time to strategically think through a lot of the decisions. One of the things I did prioritize was that I wanted a selection of roles. So I wanted to make sure that I was curating different types of roles. That was really the thought. But in that, I realized that the diversity in those roles was not always highlighted or fully executed, implemented. And it begs several questions. I wonder about what is the diversity in each of the individual types of roles across the sector. And I wonder about how we could tell stories that maybe are a bit even more niche. Like maybe you need fundraising women in philanthropy to understand the complexity and diversity of particular roles. I don't think that necessarily needs to be a podcast, but somehow these, we see so many roles across philanthropy. Actually, we really have very limited information on any or all of them. There's just so much more depth as well as breadth that we can investigate. So I think there's that piece. That's not necessarily what I'll do moving forward, but that's something I realized coming out of this process. I was in the UK when I started this, you know, experiment. I thought this was going to be in lieu of writing minutes. So all of my participants were in the UK. I didn't really set out that that had to be the case, but it ended up being the case. And so I would just say that I've had some really lovely listeners in different countries. And I think that there's an opportunity to reflect in different jurisdictions and different contexts that these roles are going to be different, that roles might differ. So I think that there's an opportunity to think through how do you tell a very contextual story, like this is how it happens here in my jurisdiction, and also link that to a global story about women in philanthropy and these roles across the globe. So season two, I don't know, I'm going to take a pause. I've got some ideas about how we can, how we might move it forward. But I certainly welcome any sort of conversations or partnerships. That's the other thing, you know, I'd love to have a buddy or a team or, you know, more people asking these questions, more people interested in getting women's stories out. I think that's just more the merrier, right?
Awesome. Yeah. All right. So I think you would do a rapid fire with your guests. So we're going to do that now. Are you ready?
Sort of.
worst philanthropic jargon.
All right. So the worst philanthropic jargon, I don't know. You'll have to tell me. Have you ever heard this theory of change?
I think I've heard it.
Have you heard it?
I don't know that I know what it means.
Okay. It's fair. Theory of change is not a bad thing in itself. Just like anything's really, like most things aren't a bad thing in themselves. It's like how we use it has been bad, or has been my worst jargon. So a theory of change is just basically a statement or roadmap about the change you want to make. That's it. Like that's, and that's okay. In philanthropy, it's sort of has been under this umbrella of strategic or even scientific philanthropy that we've been under for a while. And when it's been rolled out by foundations, it's been quite linear and quite, what's the word, strong and hard and difficult to change because it's a foundation's way of saying, we believe this is the change, the roadmap to making the change. And we're going to fund things so that we can make this change. So I think that's a little bit problematic, especially when social issues are so hard. There are so many variables. There are so many contexts. There's so many emerging things that happen in that road to change that to have something, the way that we've been using theory of change has often been a bit too firm, too structured. So that's my worst jargon. It always, I wish I feel bad because, again, I don't want to just change words just to change them, but I think we need to change our orientation to how we use theory of change and maybe hold it lightly. That's probably the best way I can kind of say it. Hold it lightly and commit to learning and relearning with it as part of the process.
Okay. What would you say is the most inspiring trend?
I think the most inspiring trend, and this is probably going to sound a little libertarian, but is mutual aid. I think it's really lovely to see individuals helping, people helping people, communities helping each other, the agency of an individual person to improve somebody else's life. So, you know, we just left London and we lived in a community that I loved. And one of the reasons I loved it was because people chipped in, they volunteered, they helped out. We saw it during COVID, the different amounts of WhatsApp groups that started, community mutual aid, little groups to say like, so-and-so needs this, who can get them this. You know, I think that's lovely. I think there was an author called John McKnight. He wrote this book called Careless Society. And he kind of critiqued the nonprofit sector to say that it can act sometimes in a way of taking away agency from communities. I don't think it's as cut and dry as that, but I think it's something to think about as our communities and families change. You know, how can we individually, people helping people, how can kind of we retain that? I think mutual aid and those elements are really, I don't know, I'm captivated by them. I think it's a really inspiring trend. I hope we continue to see it post-COVID and that neighbors continue to feel like, you know, we can continue this.
Yeah. And what would you say is the next needed role?
So the women who have been interviewed have said so many good things, so many creative next needed roles. I have been thinking a bit about the role of artificial intelligence and what impact it will have on roles in philanthropy. I tend to think that it will present some efficiencies quite quickly around grant making or decision making, program selection, organization selection. But I've always been fascinated that even when technological solutions are offered, you still need an individual, a real human being, to connect the intention of the philanthropist or donor to the implementation. That technology so far has not been able to go the full distance in creating sort of a seamless, this is where I'm going to donate, this is how I'm going to create impact. You've always needed people. So I tend to think that that remains true, even though we'll have some efficiencies. What I kind of wonder about with artificial intelligence is if the roles we have, because they become more efficient, don't actually mature into sort of greater criticality or more ethical thinking or more thinking about power dynamics. Because, you know, roles now really have to take on that task of kind of maturing themselves, maturing the roles so that they fit the philanthropic sector, so that the field can advance. I do wonder if we give too much efficiency, if those roles kind of stay like administrative, or I'm not sure, but I'm curious about that. So next needed role, some sort of many, not just one person, but a role that is AI, I don't know, not to steal somebody else's idea, but futurist or ethicist or implementer or something. Just thinking about the consequences of adopting some of these sort of maybe efficiency AI uses, just to think through what will happen to the roles when we do that and what will happen to philanthropy when we do that. Because as everybody knows, AI has bias programmed into it. And sitting in a sector that is very, very aware of power dynamics of wealth and money, you know, any sort of bias, you know, just directing money to the biggest organizations, not a diversity of organizations, that's really going to be problematic.
Well, it was wonderful to get to hear your thoughts and your review of your season one podcast. And I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to sit with you for a few minutes. So thank you.
Thank you, Elaine, for being with me here today. Thank you for doing this. For all the listeners, thank you for joining us for season one. As I said, season two's future is not yet written. If you have ideas or suggestions or want to partner, please get in touch. I will link the reports that I mentioned in the podcast notes, and I really appreciate all of your support this season. Please keep listening, please keep sharing, and reach out with any questions or thoughts. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. As well, check out all the links and the resources in the show notes. If you are a woman in philanthropy and would like to share your story, please get in touch. That's all for this episode. See you next time.